WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. Yes, I'm wearing the Chicken Palooza shirt, but Chicken Palooza is over. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't stop and get some Western fries and fried chicken. Don Mohler, I learned a lot to report back on the recon in my 30 days of eating crab cakes. Actually, I had 31 days of crab cakes because I brought the crab cake home from the boatyard on Monday, and my wife didn't eat it till Tuesday. She pan-fried it, got it caramelized. It was just as good on Tuesday. So literally today is the first day I have not had a crab cake in 32 days. But one thing I've learned is the fried chicken at Royal Farms tastes better on the Eastern Shore. And don't ask me why. It's just a lot of things taste better on the Eastern Shore. You have a home on the Eastern Shore. You know this, right?
Well, and we have a Royal Farms right up the street. And the chicken is a regular part of our diet. It's hard to beat the Rofo chicken. But as we start this edition of the Recon, let's jump right in to the tour. You did it, man. You 31 days of crab cake. Let's start with the most important question that inquiring minds want to know. What did it do? Do you weigh yourself, first of all? Some yes. people don't. What yes. did it do? What did it do in terms of your weight?
I gained, in give or take, 8 to 10 pounds.
8 to 10 pounds.
But I would say this, and part of this is exercise. I got some, but not enough. Water consumption, and I'm, you know, this is Wise Markets mug, but there's water in here right now, and I drink when I'm home. I drink a lot of water. I didn't overeat, but food that's available like Thrasher's French fries and Royal Farm chicken when you're on the road, I wasn't eating enough fruits, even though I stopped at Wise Markets in the morning and had some fruit. So my diet changed. It wasn't the crab cake or anything specific to the crab cake. I think it was more lifestyle of just being on the road as much as I was and not being as structured. But yeah, I mean, I had a lot of crab cakes. I would say this, when I'm on vacation, I usually gain weight because my thing stops, you know?
Sure.
And I think I can lose it in 10 days. It'll be, ask me what I weigh when I get on the plane next Sunday for the Raiders game. And that would tell you whether I really gained weight and kept it or whether I get rid of it. Usually I get rid of it, but this was harder. And I did not gain weight on the baseball tour in 15 at all. I lost weight. And that was because it was so hot. There was so much travel, so much movement. I was eating oatmeal every morning in an airport. So I was sort of, and I wasn't eating poorly on the road because I wasn't eating much. So this was an eating tour, dude. You know what I mean? And the other part about it is I drank a lot of beer. I mean, I had a beer or two every day. I lived in Ocean City for 8 days. I probably had 3 or 4 beers those days because of what we were doing, where we were going. So drank more, ate more, but not like I wouldn't want to do it again right now. But I am making plans to do 31 crab cakes in 31 days next August. Just so you know, I'm already putting that plan together.
It was remarkable. We'll talk a little bit about some of the highlights. I would suggest to you, you know, you're not 30 anymore. If you can knock the 10 pounds off in a week or so, I will be shocked. I will.
Oh, no, no, no. The weight's going to go off. Don't.
Wait a minute now. Here's my.
You give me a challenge. I'll go to Planet Fitness. I'll show you.
My prediction is 4 or 5, because my experience has been, unfortunately, as you get a little older, you put it on more rapidly and it takes just a little longer to get it off. Do I think you'll get it off?
Yes. I don't believe it.
I don't think you'll dump the 10 in a week. So there we go. There's the little challenge. Now you will, because I've
said it. Next time, this is kind of an interesting challenge for me, because you've known me my whole life and you remember when I was chunky as a kid. So, I mean, I was a chunky kid. They called me Meatball and, you know, like all doughboy, all that. Right. So I had that viciousness. I grew up in Dundalk with a bunch of pricks. I mean, trust me, I know about this. So I would say this in 2006, we went to Brazil to see the Rolling Stones and we came back and we didn't like the way we looked. Our pictures, we looked. I weighed 180 pounds, 178, 180 pounds. So same frame, right? So we came back and I got challenged in my kitchen table by Ken and Meg. I pulled my license out and my license said I weighed 148 pounds. No, it said 100. No, it may have said 152. And they said, you'll never weigh that again, ever. And this is 15 years ago.
And that was all they had to say, right?
And so I got fit for life. I talked to your beautiful daughter-in-law, Sandra Gallagher-Moeller, at length about, I told this story last week. I went and got fit for life. I got a book that Martina Navratilova used her diet off. It's an anti-white book. It's no white pasta, no white bread, no white salt, white sugar. It's a carb issue, but more of a sugar issue. And I went to brown rice, brown sugar when I used it, no butter, no salt. I went to that sort of diet. And that was the year I did Free the Birds. And if you go back and look at Free the Birds in 06, people were starting rumors that I was sick and stuff because I weighed 138 pounds the day that Free the Birds happened. I lost 40 pounds that summer. Once it started shedding and I stopped eating crap and I started doing hot yoga, it just went away. I'll get the, if you're challenging me to take a picture of me on the scale at 148 pounds next Sunday, I will. That might be at 151, but I have not seen my last 148 pounds.
Oh, scale. No, I didn't say that now. Let's be clear what I said.
You think it's going to take me till Christmas to do it?
Oh, no. 2 or 3 weeks. You said a week. I 2 or 3, but man, I hope you're 148 next week, you know, as do
all. I love food, dude. I mean, this hasn't made me love food. You know what this has made me do? I was in the car. We were going to Alanis Morissette on Tuesday night. First night I didn't have to have a crab cake. And we got in the car and we had friends invite us to dinner. My dear friend, John Allen, went to a beautiful place called Cured, right next to Merriweather's. Ran into Damien O'Doherty because it's serendipity. Of course I ran into him on the street.
He's Mr. Merriweather.
Yeah. So I literally ran into him in the street. So we go to, last night we're in the car and we were driving through Columbia. And there's a great Chinese restaurant there, and a great shrimp toast. And I said to my wife, I'm like, God, I'm craving Chinese food. You know, first thing we did when the tour was over, went to Pizza John's, got a pizza. Because I haven't had a pizza in a month.
Exactly.
I haven't had anything else to eat.
Did you get tired?
I want a steak. I want a chicken sandwich. I want different stuff, you know?
Did you get tired of crab cakes?
No. You know what? I didn't like getting bad ones. And I had a couple of bad ones in Southern Maryland. I had a really lousy one in St. Mike, awful one. I sent it back. Trash that I sent back in St. Michael's.
But 90% were really good, right?
Yeah, I had one or two other ones. I had one in Chesapeake City that was, I ate it. I had another one in Cumberland that wasn't very good. I ate it. I mean, when I'd say wasn't very good, I wouldn't order it again. But of the crab cakes I ordered, and I have to do the whole math because I had 41 crab cakes, I think in maybe 37 different places. A couple places I had two. Out of the 37 crab cakes places that I went, and I'm going to do the whole, by the way, Don, I should promote this. We're starting the local crab cake tour next Friday. We're going to be at the Chaucer in Highlandtown next Friday from 2 until 5. We're bringing local people in. We're going to make it a Highlandtown hootenanny. So that's the first local crab cake tour stop is in Highlandtown next Friday. It's Purple Friday too.
What's that date? That's September 10th, I believe. 10th or something.
It's next Friday, the 10th. Yes. So I'm doing that. And I'm sure the Chaucer's crab cake is going to be great. I had 37 crab cakes. I had one unedible one. I had four lousy ones. And I had 10 exceptional ones. And then I had 20 other very good crab cakes. I would call them an 8, an 8.5, something that would be very good, maybe a different kind of profile than another one. But when people say, what's the best one? I have to say, well, what do you like in your crab? I'll be really honest. That Boatyard crab cake on Monday was phenomenal.
I mean, when we sat down with Governor Hogan at the Boatyard, and the owner and everyone down there, Dan and everyone, the manager, Kevin, could not have been more gracious. But I came home. I said the same thing, Nestor.
That was a really good crab.
To Linda, I brought her home one, and I said, this is going to be a treat because this is a good crab cake. And when he told us, and we'll talk a little bit, it's a good segue into the governor. When the owner told us that they do 80,000 pounds or 80,000 crab cakes a year, that was remarkable.
But you would find that out if you talked to Fadley's or Casa, people that ship them, G&M, places that ship crab cakes on the internet. This is one of the issues why the crab's so expensive. We're not the only ones that eat it anymore. Like literally. And Damien, would tell you that at Fadley's that people get off the freeway and come in to have it. you can't get one of these in Kansas City. Hell, I couldn't get one in St. Michael's, Don. You know, I had bad crab cakes here. So when you find a great crab cake that you like and you want to ship that crab cake to family, to friends, to your sister out in Reno, right? Or you know, that this is part of where it is.
I thought that Dan down at Boatyard did a great job of educating us on the fact that one of the things that he said are many things, but one of the things that led to the shortage were the production issues by those restaurants. Now, he tries to use all Maryland crab meat, but he was talking about restaurants and seafood outlets that are willing to use Venezuelan or Asian crab meat. And he pointed out it was those supply issues that those restaurateurs then had to turn to Maryland crab meat. Right. And it really exacerbated the shortage. But I thought, you know, and again, I encourage everyone, the episodes with Governor Hogan are up and posted, as are the ones with Michael Steele. I enjoyed our sit down with the governor, and I thought all of his skills, Nestor, were on full display in the almost an hour that he spent with us. You agree with that?
I do. I fully disagree with most. And this is where you and I get sideways, right? Like, as human beings, because you believe this bullshit. You believe these numbers. You believe all.
I don't know what
and
you're
I know
talking
that
about.
That's
that
where,
sounds good, but what does that? What are you talking about?
I'm talking about when he's
when you say
quoting,
I believe
we're number
stuff.
Six in the country. We're number yeah. 94. We were 51,
yeah,
we're number six. We
yeah,
were number 12, now we're number three. Like, when I hear all of that,
well, why
that
wouldn't,
does not impress me
why,
from
why
any
not?
Politician.
Why not?
From any – it just doesn't because I don't –
Well, you have to tell me why. I mean, are you a deny? You're going to be now a guy who doesn't believe in facts? If they're ranked by the CDC.
Hold on. This is where I get sideways with political science because I think polls become
science.
That
wasn't
science.
A poll.
Science is science. Like,
wait,
to
that
me,
wasn't a poll, Nestor. He was talking about where they ranked in terms of cases and where they ranked in terms of hospital. Nothing.
No, polar. No. I'm not talking COVID. I'm talking economics. I'm talking when you want to toot your own horn, you find people in politics who will give you statistics that bake it to no one likes the red line. And, you know, and that's his job to make his case. And they voted at 94% of the people and all that stuff. I don't believe any of that because I live here and I know that you either invest in things. You don't say we're not going to invest in those people because we've done it for 100 years and we invest enough there, which I didn't agree with those answers. I wasn't going to sit and argue with the governor when I had 18. I let you do that. I thought you fought with him. It was almost like I didn't say much because – and he likes the fight. It was very, very – I saw his – his personality. I saw him burr up. I saw all of the dismissive when he would dismiss you and say you're full of ish, which he basically said. Dismissed you.
He said it politely. He was polite about it.
Doesn't matter how you say it. I don't believe it.
Sure
so,
does.
So the issue is when you come to me with all of this artillery that are numbers and facts, I will agree with him that too many people are leaving the state because of taxes. I don't agree that Martin O'Malley raised taxes 42 times. That's just bullshit. He's just throwing things in that make it sound and smell better. And I smell that about. I've never really talked to him. Like, I've been around him. I've heard him speak. I've never asked him questions. I've never sat with him. I sat with Bob Ehrlich at the State House for 3 hours having dinner 15 years ago. And every single thing he said to me wound up not being true later, like wound up in the end being bullshit.
Well, I'd have to look. It's hard for me to react to that because I wasn't privy to that. I can react to the discussion with the governor, and I will say this. Let me start with a couple of points. First of all, governor and I got along just fine. When people listen to the podcast, they'll see that we don't have to agree.
You're not the only guy that disagrees with him. He deals with this
correct.
All day.
So let me say, I thought his communication skills were on full display. And I don't mean just on the air with us. I'm talking about as he walked into the Boatyard, I watched him carefully interact with the manager, with the owner, with the customers. He's very comfortable, and that has served him very, very well. He is also very, very comfortable discussing a traditional Republican view of the world. And he and I know that we have different views on that. So when he wants to talk about the number of tax increases under Governor O'Malley, good friend of ours, good friend of the show, I don't dispute those numbers. What I would come back in a much longer form and discussion would be to talk about what we got by those increases, and are we a better state because of those increases? What he was able to do and tap into effectively in two elective campaigns was the fact, and I do believe that this is true, and he recognizes it, that Maryland, despite being this blue, 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 blue state, in many ways is purplish. And in many ways, I had a young man who worked for me. I had lunch with him the day after we met with the governor. And he's a progressive Democrat, but he is impressed by Governor Hogan's ability to tap into what he says, and this guy is a pretty piped-in politico, that Marylanders, like many voters across the nation, don't like a lot of drama. And Governor Larry Hogan, for better or worse, sort of comes off as a no-drama guy. He doesn't get into high-profile battles with the legislature. He's certainly not, and we'll talk about his comments about Ron DeSantis and others. He's not a bomb thrower like that. So Marylanders of a modern temperament, or a moderate, excuse me, temperament, look at him and say, you know what? I think this guy is pretty much down the middle. Now, the governor and I have some major policy disagreements. I don't think we have personal disagreements. We disagree, and it was clear when people listened to the podcast, on the red line. But I will tell you, Nestor, I will tell you, and this is going to sound strange coming from me, one of the things that I thought the governor was absolutely correct about, and I have to say, I almost have to give him points for following through, was that he said, Don, I ran opposing the red line. Why wouldn't I cancel the red line when the voters elected me? I think that's a pretty fair question. I disagree with canceling the red line, but I certainly can see how he came to a conclusion that, look, I told these people I was going to cancel the red line, and I canceled it. So I thought all in all.
Oh, I thought he was impressive, Don. Like, right. I'm not, again, what he said, I dispute as a journalist, as someone. By the way, I was with Dan Rodericks the other day, and Dan and I fished, and we didn't talk a lot of journalism, but we talked a little bit. Because if we went into the Trump rabbit hole or into the city or into we were fishing. We wouldn't have the, like when you and I get together, some days we have good days. Some days we talk about the Ravens and fight, you know, or the Orioles and fight a little bit. With Dan and I, we had one journalism conversation, and it was something I tweeted last week. I tweeted it personally, and I want to find it because it was delightfully profane in the end, but it also made a great point about what journalism is. And I want to get the exact quote for you, so I want to find it. But in asking questions and in getting to whatever your truth is, right, that just stating things that are numbers and there's no rebuttal or there's no where did those numbers come from, and you can call Malia Cromer about that on the polling side or call any of these activists in Annapolis who will
His economic development team, when he quotes an economic development statistic, they have some data in front of them to support
that. Yeah, that's manipulated.
I don't know. When you say manipulated, I mean, you know, they've got data that will allow them to say that we have moved from X to X in economic growth. I mean, you could find other data maybe, but there's nothing dishonest about sharing data that shows that. Here's an example. You probably haven't seen it because you've been working all morning. You posted It's gotten actually some pretty thoughtful responses on Facebook. I jumped in and refuted what you said, or responded to what you said. And then other folks have jumped in. You said this morning, why do people ask for topics when they're going to come on the show? And I responded to you, I would never let anyone that I worked for go on and do any interview or any show, whether it's Sunday morning with Jennifer Franciotti or Meet the Press or whatever it is, without knowing the topics ahead of time. That would be
you did this segment with me without knowing the topic.
No, it's a different thing. It's a different thing. Now, I made clear that's different than asking for questions. That's out of the – but when Jane Miller would call and say, hey, Don, I need a couple minutes with Kevin, I would say to her, sure, Jane, what's topic? And she said, well, I want to talk about his view about light rail and extending it into Timonium and some of the reaction.
Well, would you say to her, you're not allowed to ask him about what Biden did this morning, or tell him what
he can't say?
That's the part that pisses me off.
They know the unwritten rule, though.
We're going to talk about taxes or whatever. But to say I'm not allowed to ask the governor about why he voted for Ronald Reagan,
it's the same dust up that some of the White House press, when Jen Psaki tried to return some normalcy, to say to the White House press corps, what are some of the things that you're looking into? She's not trying to stack the deck. She wants to come with information that is helpful. These guys aren't, and gals aren't, computers. They just can't hit a button in their brain and recall the facts and figures. So if you want to talk about transportation, I want to come and I want to have my principal, who I'm working for, have some data.
Well, this is where I thought Hogan came to me, and I'm the wrong guy to come to this with. And we had 40 minutes. We had a crap. It was fine. But if I was really with him, I would have been much more challenging about data points that all Ben.
Well, you'd have to do a lot of research. You'd have to have your own data, and you'd have to come back.
Point is, once you've rehearsed that we're the number three offense in the league, and we had this many. Once you rehearse those numbers, you just repeat those numbers.
Well, Nestor, let's use that as an example. If Greg Roman gets up at some point, God, that would be wonderful news. I don't anticipate that. But if Greg Roman were to say, yeah, I'm really happy that, you know, last year we were the seventh least penalized team in the NFL. Well, that's a fact or it's not.
That's like wins and losses with pitchers.
But if you have data to show that's not true.
I think there's better data, but that.
Well, I don't know what that would be. You would repudiate that if it came from them. In other words, if you have other data as a reporter, for example, if Kevin Kamenetz were to say, listen, the red line is $2.9 billion. It's $900 million in federal funding, and each of the locals are going to have to come up with, and I don't have it off the top of my head, but let's just say Baltimore County needs to come up with $200 million as its share. And I'm confident we're going to do that. Now, if Jane has information that says, well, it's not $2.9 billion, it's $3.6 billion, she can present that. But you've got the folks that you're going to interview want to be prepared. That's a good thing. We saw what happens when a president and a person in power is not prepared. So I laughed out loud when people would joke that Biden had a briefing book. You're damn right he had a briefing book. He's acting as a responsible elected official so that if you ask something about troop levels in Germany that he might not be able to spit out, he'll turn to the tab that says Germany and he'll be able to give you an accurate assessment. That doesn't mean you don't push back or you don't ask. Very often you'll see someone in the White House press corps say, Jen, I'd like the backup data on that. And she said, yeah, we'll be glad. We'll get that to you. I mean, that's all very fair. I would never ask anyone for the questions. I was clear about that when I responded to your Facebook post. I don't say to, Jennifer Franciotti or whoever it is or Deborah Wiener, if they want to interview the boss, well, tell me exactly what question. No, no. Say, well, okay, what areas you want to talk about? Oh, growth at Owings Mills Mall? Sure, no problem. Then I bring the – and here's what typically happens, Nestor. I'll take you behind the scenes. If we're talking Owings Mills Mall and the growth out there, I would then immediately – say to the director of economic development, hey, get a couple of pages together real quick so the boss is up to speed on everything happening at Owings Mills Mall so he can be prepared for this interview. You don't want a knucklehead out there who doesn't know anything. And that doesn't have anything to do with the lack of integrity for journalists. It's just saying, let me try to be helpful to you.
Well, Andrea Junker tweeted this last week and I retweeted it. Journalism 101 rule. If someone says it's raining and another person says it's dry, it's not your job to quote them both. Your job is to look out the effing window and find out which one is true.
I agree.
Now more than ever. And I think that when the governor is allowed to just sit and rattle off plaudits for himself, which it was. Now this, I want to be nice to Larry. Let me say a few things here. First things first, it's clear he hates Trump. And I never felt that way a year ago that he was, I felt like he avoided Trump out of fear. And I still feel that way. And I feel like it was politically expeditious for all of them to do that last year because of the bullying. But that still doesn't make him a hero to me because he didn't jump on the table and say, that guy's a liar. He's a lout. He's a drug. And like all the things that were pretty obvious to all of us. That is never spoken by anybody who voted for him. I thought the Ronald Reagan answer was really weak and really like, I don't know. I mean, after spending an hour interviewing him, I didn't enjoy it as much as I wish I would have enjoyed it because I thought it was among all the interviews I've ever done in this format. It was not my style.
Yeah, I don't feel
allow
that.
An elected official to just pat themselves on the back. But the fact that you argue with him as another not elected official, but elected official.
Well, we discussed. You say argue. We discussed our policy differences. I don't think in any way, actually, having seen many electeds, I give him high marks for not being scripted. Listen, he obviously pushed your buttons for sharing data. That's something that you and I'll have to talk about later. I mean, that's obviously
something. It just doesn't impress me.
Well,
it should.
I mean, you can go refute it, but it should. I mean, if somebody tells you, you know, for example, when Governor O'Malley was governor, he would often refer to that, you know, we're very proud that Maryland is rated number one by Education Week in public school systems in the nation. What? That's fact. I mean, Education Week created Maryland Public Schools number one. That's a fact. So Governor O'Malley should talk about that.
That just
of course it's rated by, I mean, that's such a, to me, negative way to look. Does it make them number one? I don't know. You know, it makes them number one on that ranking. So that when Governor Hogan says by some economic data that his Department of Commerce has that Maryland ranked at a certain place with that data, that is accurate. I did not find him scripted at all. I found him relaxed.
Over number. I just don't believe. I think it's.
Well,
a
I don't know. That sounds like no nothing.
To be arguing all of these. These
tell me
what you think. Tell me what you believe.
You sound like
that's what I wanted for Larry Hogan.
Nestor,
and I feel like we got a lot of that.
Nestor, you sound like a know nothing, and you're not a know nothing. To say I just don't believe data. That sounds ridiculous.
No. I don't believe you manipulated data from a I'm old enough now. Like I'm old enough now. I don't even want. We'll get sideways because I'm watching the Baltimore Orioles chief revenue officer charge $98 for a lunch to give his wisdom, and I'm sure he's going to come out with data about how incredible the Orioles are.
Well,
the Orioles are
good.
Not incredible, but if I sit and listen to him for an hour without being able to refute it, he'll have some magazine that says we got the number one farm system.
Well, Nestor,
and I'm like, no, but you're last place.
Nestor,
nobody goes to your games.
Nestor,
that's really the truth.
You can invoke all your Oriole hatred that you want.
It's not Oriole hatred.
Here's a fact.
It's just
here's
anybody
a fact.
Can put flimsy numbers together. Tell me what you believe. That's what I want to know.
Here is a fact in two major publications that people rely upon The Orioles have recently been ranked number one and number two in top farm systems in baseball. Now, we vilified them when they were ranked last. So you can't vilify them when they're ranked last by those publications and then say it doesn't matter that they're ranked number one, because you know what? It sure as hell does matter that they're ranked number one. And my guess is with one more solid draft, that ranking is going to, I don't know if it'll be number one again, but it will certainly be in the top 10. And if I had a research staff, I was thinking about this yesterday, Nestor, I would love to go back for 20 years and look each year at the team that was ranked, or teams ranked in the top five. Let's pick Baseball America. Teams that were ranked in the top five. And then go 2 years out and see if that ranking led to good baseball in their home cities. My gut says it probably did, but I don't have the data to back that up. I will tell you this regarding the Orioles. I think, and it's fun, you know, I've been, you know, I'm a Mike Elias fan and a Sid Medall fan. I mean, I've been open about that, but I actually think for the first time, because, you know, I'm hung up, but you got to have good players. And for the first time in a couple of years, I think, at least on the offensive side of the ball, we actually have, and I'll name them for you here in a moment, four or five players who might actually be able to play on a real baseball team. Ryan Mountcastle. Would any team in baseball take Ryan Mountcastle? In a heartbeat. Cedric Mullins. Would any team in baseball take Cedric Mullins? In a heartbeat. Those are the two, obviously, premier players. You hope Rushman's going to be that. But I'm talking about right now on the roster. Then you've got Austin Hayes, Santander, and Trey Mancini. Maybe not all-star players, but good players. So for the first time, we actually have four or five legitimate baseball players on the team. Been a long time since we could say that. Now, does this translate into us being competitive in 2023? We'll see, right? The proof will be in the taste of the pudding.
Don Mueller is here. He is my partner in crime. We fight often. You should hear us off the air from time to time. I will not be sitting with him at the Ravens games fighting this year, so we'll just fight on Monday mornings after that. We had Larry Hogan. I don't want to be – I would just say this. My wife asked me about this because Larry's been to some events of ours for charity. I've run into him. I mean, we know each other a little bit, but we don't know each other. It's the first time I've ever had a microphone next to him asking questions. And quite frankly, I didn't ask many of the questions. You were more prepared to fight with him than I was. I let you. You jumped in and you're elbowing. He's elbowing. He's
quoting. We had fun.
Goofy Governor numbers. You're telling him he's wrong. He's telling you you're wrong. I'm just trying to get a crab cake and an iced tea down at the boatyard. But I'll say this. I'm less likely than ever to vote for him after spending a little time with him because he did number me to death, and nothing pisses me off.
I don't know. I don't know what your thing with numbers is. Let me tell you what was interesting.
I think it's what you do when you don't have a philosophical argument.
True.
You just start quoting numbers and platitudes. Talk to me about the Bay. Talk to me about important thing. Talk to me about people.
Well, I think he
not
would
about
suggest,
numbers and statistics.
I think he would suggest that
I don't vote for that because I think it's bullshit.
I think he would suggest that economic growth and development and pointing to hard numbers about jobs created and corporate retention is hard data. But let me you have a thing about data. We'll deal with that another day.
I have a thing about where it comes from.
Well, that's fine. I mean, if you got numbers that can refute his data, fine.
I've spent 30 years on the radio where everybody thinks the referees are crooked.
His data.
Right?
That's
Carolina refs. So that's a sports analogy to say, well, the refs are crooked.
He had hard data.
I am of a belief that politically and knowing where the money comes from and how dirty it is, you can spend a couple hundred grand to bake results so that the governor has something he can say. say that sounds like a victory, well, even if it's not true.
If he
Harris moves his lips, no, all
if he
day,
says it, it's
he's a
very,
moron.
Nestor,
but he's a doctor.
Nestor,
but he's a doctor who's
very,
a moron.
Very, very different. And to mention, and listen, this is
Rand
incredible.
Paul's a doctor. Somebody goes to him.
I am going to be a doctor. I am going to be blistered by my Democratic friends, because here I am really defending Governor Hogan. And we have our disagreements, but I thought he was very genuine, very forthright. And let me tell you what I thought.
I give him points for anti-Trump. I give him points for arguing that he tried to show you some data
that showed that the state had done well under his leadership. God forbid he didn't do that as governor. It would be malpractice.
I don't need data for him to tell me he's done a good job.
I think people appreciate.
I prefer anecdotal. I really
people,
do.
I appreciate data and facts. Now, here's what I thought was interesting, and it is. And I'll tell you what, I don't think he knows the answer to this question. It is clear, and he was very clear to us about his political future. He obviously hasn't made a decision about what he will do next, but it was crystal clear that he has identified that in the Trump lane, that the Republican race to the presidency will be cluttered with perhaps the former celebrity host himself, Ron DeSantis, Tom Cotton, Ted Cruz, Kristi Noem, your friend Rand Paul. That lane,
Rand
Paul, Trump lane, the Trump lane is going to be very congested. What I think, interestingly enough, that the governor is trying to weigh is, can he reverse Trump 2016 game plan to his advantage? And what I mean by that
is he defecated all upon Trump.
Well,
he lost the White House, he lost the Senate. I don't hear any Republicans speak about
well, let me,
in that
let me
way,
explain.
Ever. So I give him big points for that.
Let me explain what I mean by reversing the Trump 2016 game plan. Trump recognized early on that when those 10 or 12 folks stood on the stage, that he was all alone in crazy land. I mean, even Cruz at that point wasn't in crazy land. And certainly Jeb wasn't in crazy land. And Rand Paul wasn't as crazy as he is now. So Trump alone was in crazy land. And in the early to middle primaries, 25 to 26 to 27% of the people liked crazy land. They liked the celebrity president. It was enough to keep winning primary after primary because none of those other guys would man up or woman up and drop out. I think what the governor is trying to evaluate is whether or not he will be the only moderate voice, the traditional, what we caught on the show, the Hogan, Steele,
well, all the rest of them got run out, right? Like Kasich, all the flavors of Bush and Reagan from 4 years ago completely got washed out.
No
woman or black has any chance on that ticket. It's a white power party is what it is.
We talked to him about the challenge of that. I think he was very honest and forthright in how troubled he is by the fact that the party that he and a Steele and a Glassman represent, their version of the Republican Party, appears to be dwindling, and the DeSantis brand seems to be taking hold. That clearly troubled him. Now, did you and I both have trouble? And again, I thought he handled it well. We just disagree. I think the fact that he voted for his dad one time and Ronald Reagan the next, I think that's not doing your civic duty. When it comes down, when push comes to shove, there's going to be one.
And it's even
president.
More embarrassing that he can defend it.
Well,
I think that
I understood.
It made me never want to vote for him.
Well,
hearing
I'm telling you,
I voted for Larry Hogan. I'm not anti-Larry.
I understood his answer.
Sat with me. I'm telling you, after sitting with him for an hour, I think less of him than more of him. So that's all I can say.
I understood his answer. I don't get as emotional about these things as you do. I understood his answer. I didn't agree with his answer. His answer was that he did not think that either President Biden or President Trump was acceptable. My question back to him obviously is, but in a two-party system, one of them is going to be president. And I think he was pretty confident it wasn't going to be Donald Trump. But I would suggest to the
certainly
governor,
not in this state, right?
To the governor that anybody, right, and particularly in this state. So it was sort of a safe throwaway of the vote.
The more he would put his foot on Trump's throat, the more I would like him. Right. So I did like – again, my wife came home and gave me the quiz, and I had to give her the private answer. And I'm like, you know, I see how he's appealing, and I see what the appeal is. It's just not an appeal for me as a voter, because I didn't like the interview. I didn't like the answers I got. I let you do all the challenging because you're better equipped for it, and he respected you a whole lot more than me in the way that – and you guys got after it. But it was very interesting – to watch him get emotional and bird up as he pushed back on you.
Well,
he likes to fight.
He likes talking policy, and he was comfortable. And again, I thought we had a really good, and again, I encourage folks, go out and listen to both episodes. You be the judge. I thought we had a very good discussion about Baltimore.
You pushed his buttons really hard.
He and I disagree. The part that was interesting that I thought he pushed back on a little bit, because it is truly a state function. And we've heard this from a lot of folks, Nestor, from the Matt Gallagher's, Wes Moore's talked about it. A lot of folks I think police commissioner Brandon's talked about it, is this idea of really having the state do a better job in parole and probation. Because one of the things the governor did say is a lot of the same folks keep committing the same crimes. We hear that over and over. What I pushed back on a little bit is that one of the ways to fight back against that is to really enhance parole and probation, which is a state function. And on that part, that was one of the few times where I thought he pushed back a little bit.
Sitting with him, I got the vibe he doesn't like Baltimore, and the fact that I don't like anti-Baltimore sentiment, and that's why I wouldn't vote for. I mean, I've sat with everybody. I've sat with Barry Glassman. We've sat with Michael Steele. By the way, and I want to throw this at you before we end this version of this, because Larry Hogan's not the only Republican we sat with this month. Michael Steele, I've had a couple people say to me, why doesn't he just go in as a Democrat and run on the Democratic side? He might stand a chance to that would be the real way for him to win.
Because he doesn't. I thought Michael gave us, again, I'll ask people to go back and listen. I think we chatted about it, if I recall. Michael's not
a
Democrat.
Republican.
Yeah, he's not a Democrat. He's a traditional low taxes, low government. Listen, the major philosophical difference between traditional, and this would be true with Barry Glassman, who's a good friend of mine, good friend of yours. They believe that less government is better. And most progressive Democrats
think better government's better.
We think it's a straw man. We think it's the issue is there are things that government can do that communities and individuals can't do on their own. A discussion about what those things are is very, very fair, but the whole less government is more, the Ronald Reagan government is the enemy thing, I don't think that's been productive. But Michael Steele's not a Democrat, and Michael Steele is going to have to decide whether there are enough moderate Republicans in this state to get him through a primary, and then make him a very effective general election candidate. But I thought
several people that Hogan won't run for president, that he will run for Cardin seat because he feels like he can win that easily.
He believes
he will have that seat, and that would move, a 2025, 2026 Washington, D.C., that he would have a better chance of doing that, that it would almost be sitting there for him if he wanted to. Right.
That assumes that Senator Cardin will decide it's time to step aside in a few years. And there will be some other folks out there like John Cardin and Johnny O and others who might put their hand up and say, put me in, coach. So we've got a lot to talk about. I thought the governor was impressive. I appreciate him coming on. And I tell you what, Nestor, next week we're going to have coming up in September. We just booked a brigadier general, retired brigadier general, who served very, very well in Iraq, has been in charge of troops and withdrawals, and he's going to come on and walk us through Afghanistan. And I think next week you and I'll jump into a little bit to Afghanistan and Biden's performance. And, you know, and by that time we'll be talking a little Ravens. So again, good stuff on the recon.
Brief me on that. I wasn't in the pregame notes that we're having the Brigadier General.
Brigadier General coming on September 23rd, all set up. So we're ready to go.
You know what makes this fun is you and I like legitimately disagree about a lot of stuff. You know,
yes,
like,
we do.
Fine.
Listen, lay off the crab cakes, get back on the scale, and enjoy the music.
I want to make this clear too with Larry Hogan, because I feel like I've been a little negative on the governor here this hour, because I think he's doing a good job running the state. I don't think he's doing a poor job. I just did the demeanor and the answers in certain ways. To me, it was a little off-putting. That's all.
Yeah,
on-putting for the anti-Trump.
Man, you're going to get me killed with my Democratic friends.
You're defending Larry too much.
I thought he was really engaging. I thought that he interacted with everyone in the place, including us. Well, didn't mean we agree on policy, but I found his demeanor very, very positive.
I agree with all of that, but I think most of what he said, I have questions about, disputes about.
Well, then
about,
go find the data and question it. I'm gonna know nothing. You're now gonna
let
start.
Let me go back to this again. Journalism 101 rule. If someone says it's raining, even if it's a statistic that is manufactured from some cosmos of somewhere, and another person says it's dry, it's not your job to quote them both.
Do you
so
remember?
To me, to nod my head as Larry Hogan pats himself on the back, that's not what I do.
Do you remember
what anyone patting themselves?
I'm not
pat yourself
about,
too much on the back.
Pat him
it
on
really
the,
makes me a little.
He doesn't need you to pat him on the back. Do you remember what Pam Wood said to us that was journalism 101 for her? She said she never forgets it. She was taught that if your mom says, "I love you, honey," you should say to her as a little child, "Prove it." So that was what Dan Roderick said to me when I brought up this quote. That's the Pam Wood answer. So we'll get Pam back on soon.
Don Mohler, he thinks I'm wrong again. I think he's wrong. It's good. But we'll get together again next week. We'll do this. You can find him, of course, out on the front porch from time to time, as well as on social media and having fun with me and retweeting stuff. And my spiritual godfather and one-time guidance counselor. Football next week. All right.
Can't wait
about that like we used to.
Woo, can't wait.
There he goes. 513. There he goes. Don Mohler, my partner in crime. And by the way, you asked me about crab cakes. We talked about Michael Steele. That crab bomb was good, right? I told my wife triple yolk mayonnaise. Like, that's the only place that did it like that.
That
so
was
there's
terrific.
A uniqueness. Someone who loves mayonnaise is going to think that's the greatest crab cake.
Yeah,
ever.
that was a really good crab cake.
It was a great crab cake. I don't disagree, but I think there's profiles for whether you like Old Bay, whether you like butter, whether you like mustard.
I thought it was interesting, and we'll get out of here. I thought it was interesting you picked up on at the Boatyard that it was almost an old school Baltimore crab cake. And I've come to the conclusion that's the one you like.
I like it where it has everything in it.
Yeah, you like the old school Baltimore crab cake, which is a good crab cake.
On the 19th,
why we love
we're at Wise Markets in Fullerton. we're going to have their signature crab cake, $6 signature crab cake. And then I think we're going to take some meat. And I'm going to make a few different recipes, like a Chopped episode. I said to my wife, they have a whole kitchen there. You can go get all the spices, bring them over, and we can make little crab cakes, mini crab cakes, in various ways to taste the different profile of a Dijon mustard, a dry mustard.
Put a little dash of dry mustard in there. Exactly right.
And a cast iron pan.
There he goes.
Don Mohler. Don Mohler is here. He is the former Baltimore County executive, my former high school guidance counselor. By the way, when Johnny O comes on Acosta's in 2 weeks, we got to find out when the ribbon cutting is at Colgate.
I'll make sure his team has that ready to go.
My alma mater.
We'll ask Dr. Lynch. She should know that kind of stuff.
Don Mohler, I love him. You love him. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop debating political science here at Baltimore Positive. I don't think it's a science at all.